Hello.
Konnichiwa. Welcome to the Global Podcast.
Brought to you by Kwansei Gakuin University.
Tokyo Marunouchi Campus.
Our show is about events around the world from the perspective of people on the street.
With your host, Tamago.
And Kangaku Taro.
Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm good.
Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
All right. So basically, like, as you know, the podcast is for university students in Japan. And I think it would be interesting for them to get a sense of like a bit about your career and a bit about why you started Basis Nuts. What was the motivation and some of the lessons you learned?
Okay. So I guess I kind of came to this in this very sort of convoluted way. I'm originally from New York. My parents are Chinese immigrants from Hong Kong and Taiwan. And I lived and worked in New York for about 5 years. I worked in magazines. And then I decided I wanted to do something a bit more helpful. So I decided to go to grad school and studied international relations and ended up working at a branch of the World Bank afterwards in Moscow. So kind of, I stayed with that world for a while, the World Bank, UN world, for about 10 years and ended up here in Copenhagen in 2014. So, it was a lot of, I can't say that I wanted to start a nut business, which is what Basis Nuts is. It's a business that focuses on importing unique varieties of nuts grown by small-scale farmers. I can't say that anything that I've done up until this point actually would lead to this business, but at the same time, it is linked in a way. I spent a couple years in Afghanistan. My first job with the World Bank, with IFC, was based in Moscow. So I used to travel a lot in Central Asia. And in Central Asia, you see this huge mix of different dried fruits and nuts at the market that you never see anywhere. So basically, I guess I was doing different things with the UN. I ended up here in Copenhagen and I was feeling like I should do something else. The UN was fine, but I kind of felt like maybe there could be something else to do that would be more impactful, that could really help producers in developing countries. So this idea of starting a nut business, it kind of like merged all of these things together, where it was kind of development, it was kind of business, which my parents did. So my parents were always entrepreneurs. And it also, being in Denmark, where actually the nuts in Denmark are not very good. they're quite expensive. There aren't very many varieties that you find here. So it just kind of like all came together where I thought, okay, maybe it's time for me to do something else and I can start a business that could maybe work with producers in places like Afghanistan and I could, try doing development through business. So yeah, it was kind of like a sort of a very indirect way of getting where I am.
So why Afghanistan? If you've traveled all over Central Asia, why did you choose Afghanistan?
I think anyone who spent time in Afghanistan, and you did, right?
Yes.
You were in Afghanistan, yeah. I think people who have spent time there, they come away with this love of the country. People are super nice. It's a beautiful place. And it does have these really unique products. And I didn't actually realize this until I learned a bit more, but almonds, for example, almonds come from Central Asia. They come from Afghanistan, Iran, Uzbekistan. So the original native varieties of almonds, they come from that part of the world. So, you know, wow. They're growing wild in the hills. They've cultivated different types of almonds. So you have these really, really delicious varieties of nuts in Afghanistan that you don't find anywhere else. And you don't see here. You don't see really in the US, you don't see in parts of in Europe. So, you know, it seemed like a really good opportunity to bring something that was unique and also could sort of bring me back to a place that I really did enjoy being in.
Nice. And help some small farmers in Afghanistan.
Yeah. I mean, I've done a lot of development projects. I've been involved in development projects that have been quite short or kind of superficial, I would say. You know, you come in with a lot of money, you throw a lot of money at people, you do 2-day trainings, and then you move on. But if you start a business, you're investing yourself there for decades, right? Ideally. So I can work with businesses, I can work with producers, I can try to improve standards, their quality standards, so that they can then export to other countries. So it's multifaceted, I guess.
So your work with these farmers is not just buying these nuts, right? You're actually helping them in terms of...
Maybe you can ask your full question before I interrupt.
No. I mean, do you also advise them on business strategy, and do you advise them on production or export, or you know, export standards?
That would be my ideal, like, step two. Step one is start a business that doesn't die. Start a business that makes enough profit to grow. And if I can establish myself in that space here in Denmark or in Europe, then I can have the room to kind of make those demands. I just started this, you know, 6 months ago. I'm still trying to find the market here. I'm still trying to convince people. I'm still trying to educate people that, like, almonds, there are different almonds, that, you know, that the variety of almonds is not between salted and honey roasted, you know. Exactly. That there's, like, different kinds of almonds. So that's kind of the first step. And then the next step, once I've established and have, like, a functioning business, to bring that down to the producer level and start to make more demands.
How did you name the base nuts?
The name basis, it came from brainstorming, sitting with my husband one morning, and I needed a name because I needed to register an email address so that I can go to a trade fair. So it was kind of like all of these backward steps. I wanted to go to a trade fair, but in order to go, I needed a company name, and I didn't have a company name. So I knew I wanted a name that kind of signified, like, the foundation or origins, because it was about kind of like finding nut varieties at their places of origin. So, you know, we were just sitting there brainstorming all of these random words, and then suddenly I said basis, and he looked at me and he's like, oh yeah, and I'm like, yeah, okay. You know, at the time we thought it was maybe temporary, but then it just stuck, and honestly I haven't really, like, had the energy to think of another name.
Yeah, but it's a nice name. I really like it.
Great, thank you.
And we like your website as well.
Yeah, beautiful.
Thanks. Yeah. That's from a website company called Wix.com. And they do actually have a bunch of templates that make it really easy to have a very nice looking website. Yeah, but I also have beautiful photos from
exactly. Yeah, so you actually took all those photos with a friend.
My friend took the photos. Right. I mean, I hired her to take photos, and they just came out beautifully. She has like a background in fashion, so kind of, you know, you can tell it's very beautiful and artistic.
And so how is the business going? Like, what's your strategy to grow the business? And what are some of the challenges that you're facing?
Yeah, so the business has kind of, the business strategy has changed a bit since in the beginning, when I was first thinking about this business. Initially, I didn't actually want to do retail. I didn't want to do direct to consumers. I wanted to sell to distributors or to importers, and to basically just facilitate between the suppliers and the buyers. But in talking to people in Europe, I realized that actually there wasn't that much interest because, or there was interest, but they weren't willing to take the risk because it was a new product. It was going to be very expensive. You know, transport from Afghanistan is quite expensive. The importers, distributors, they didn't want to spend the money to do the marketing, to do the awareness raising. And then on top of all of that, the producers in Afghanistan don't have many of those international food safety certifications that buyers in Europe are looking for. So, you know, after a while of trying to reach out to people, get them interested to buy in larger quantities, I realized that I actually had to do the selling to people myself. I had to create that market. You know, so that was kind of like the first big shift in business strategy change. And then now I would say that COVID has been another big one because my sort of target audience, it was going to be high-end restaurants and bars, because they are, not only are the products unique, but they are also really good. The almonds have this really great, fresh, sweet flavor. The pine nuts that from Afghanistan, they taste like flowers and lavender and pine, you know. Don't taste like any pine nut that you're used to.
So how much have you eaten of your own stock?
Yeah, I don't, I'm not gonna say. But okay, my strategy was to target this group of sort of high-end restaurants, and Copenhagen is a good place for that. You know, there's Noma, was the best restaurant in the world, is here, and the whole food scene around Noma has really exploded over the last, you know, whatever, almost 10 years. There's a lot of really good chefs who've opened up restaurants. So the restaurant scene is great. And I was hoping to target them. So I had actually, I got my first shipment, a small shipment in September last year. And that was just handing out to some people. I was selling small quantities just to test whether this would work. And then we ordered the bigger shipment. This was going to be the real shipment, which of course was delayed because of transport issues and COVID. And then it was a bit more delayed because there were some issues with like delays with the lab testing. And then by the time that the products were ready for sale, they shut down everything.
Oh.
So because of COVID.
Yeah.
Yeah. So because of the second wave, because the numbers were rising. So now, you know, I actually do need to figure out like, what am I going to do if I can't actually access these high-end restaurants? If bars, actually the roast almonds, slightly salted, they're like perfect as a bar food. They're like peanuts, you know, you shell them and, but without bars, without places where people can congregate, I have to find other ways to reach customers.
Well, I eat almonds at home every day.
Yes. So I have to go like really big with the online marketing, with trying to reach people. I mean, I guess that's where I am now, is trying to get like some sales going, trying to reach out to influencers or...
Right.
I hate that word, but there are people who there are people who do have large online followings, and they would be good to work with to get interested in the products.
And what have they said so far, these influencers? What's their reaction so far?
I have talked to one guy who, but he's a very low-key influencer, I would say. He's like, he forages in the wild and stuff. He takes beautiful photos, but he really liked the products. Right. But, you know, this is all very new for me. I work at the UN. I do donor relations, you know. I like, I'm still trying to figure out how to do a business.
Yeah.
But, like, do you talk to your parents about your business since they're entrepreneurs?
You know, I suppose I should, but... My parents' business was quite different. They had a jewelry store in Chinatown, New York for many years. Actually, my dad started with a jewelry stand. Right. So he was repairing jewelry. Then he saved up enough money to open a store.
Right.
And then he made enough money to open a factory.
Wow.
And then because of the financial crisis and everything else, then the factory went back to store.
Okay.
I don't know. I feel like it's a different time than time that they were operating in. There was no internet, you know, people just showed up.
Was he importing the jewelry?
No, they were, well, I guess they were buying from a lot of Hong Kong dealers.
Right.
Some stones and some pre-made designs. But for a while they had a factory, so they were manufacturing the jewelry.
That's the second phase. So if I understand you correctly, you have your father and your mother living in a country that's not their own, which is like Denmark, let's say, starting a business from small scale, which is like, you know, what you're doing, with a longer term plan, and then some kind of unforeseen catastrophe happens, like maybe like COVID, and then they figure out how to adjust. I'm seeing a lot of similarities here.
Yes, that's true. That is true. Yeah. Yeah, I do. You know, it's hard, I guess, when you think of your parents and you think of them as like operating in an entirely different world than the one that you're living in, because they just discovered the internet like 10 years ago, right? My mom had never been online until we got her an iPad.
Right.
And my dad, I remember like teaching him how to use the mouse.
But I mean,
I agree, yes, you're right. You're right. Of course.
But no, I mean, in the sense of like, there's some foundational things about business, which is part of it is like how to survive, right? Mm-hmm. How to survive. Yeah. And that's,
you know,
there's
a lot of transferable skills.
One
of the things that I think really has helped them, which I don't have, at least not yet, is the business network or the network of people who are doing the same thing.
Right.
And when they were in their business world, in their jewelry world, all of their friends, all of the people that they associated with were also working in jewelry. Mm. And I don't know if, I guess it was business that got them in touch with each other, or maybe it was that they became friends because of, so hold on, let me rephrase that. They knew each other because of the business,
right?
But because of the business, they expanded their network to know more people involved in the business, right?
Right.
So they kind of had that already. And I'm, you know, it's something that I haven't yet built here in Copenhagen. I know a few people working in food, and I'm definitely growing that network, which is so helpful, because, you know, you ask one person who's done it before and they can tell you something that you can spend like 5 hours searching on the internet.
Right. About. They'll tell you in 5 minutes. Mm. Right.
Yeah. So that's something that I know that I can see that has benefited my parents, which I need to build. But yeah, I mean, you're right. I guess we always like used to, we always used to tell my dad that he made mistakes, and we often like to tell my dad how to run his business, and then he would get really mad at us and say we didn't know anything.
Right. So that's okay. I get it now.
Well, oh, please tell us about more the produce, about the producers. So was it difficult to convince or tell them to, you know, export the nuts to the Europe? How was it?
So Afghanistan has had an almond, a nut industry. Nuts and dried fruit is a huge part of their export economy. But they don't typically export to Europe. Most of their exports go to India, they go to South Asia, they go to the Middle East. It's not that they needed to be convinced to export to Europe. Mm. It's more that the Europeans needed to be convinced to buy from a place like Afghanistan. Mm. And there's definitely a different ways to kind of message about this, and I'm still working on the messaging to see what will work. Mm. Because you can take the angle of like, you are a European, you're in a rich country, you should help a poor country. And there's definitely companies and businesses that take that message, that approach, and it works, of course. Definitely, people like to feel good about themselves and buying things to help people in need. But
Please tell us more details about the messaging. So how do you message to the people in Europe about the nuts?
Right, so I don't take that message. I don't take that approach. My message is that there are these amazing products that you as a consumer are missing out on because you just don't know that they exist. So, you know, the fact that it is Afghanistan, it could be Afghanistan, it could be Poland, you know, it's the idea is that this is an amazing product that you never see, that because of the way that the supply chains work, you know, it's cheaper for someone in Europe to buy almonds that were grown in California and then exported to India for processing and then come to Europe. It's cheaper to buy that than to buy almonds from like a farm in Afghanistan that produces almonds. But because the way that these supply chains work, they're so complex, they're so untransparent. So people really don't know where nuts come from.
Actually,
this is super interesting. Can you tell us maybe in simplified form, like why is it less expensive to buy from a California grower that's gone through all these hoops than it is to buy from a farmer in Afghanistan?
It really comes down to machines. It comes down to the fact that almond farms in California they basically mechanized the process from start to finish. You know, they have rows and rows, thousands of rows of almond trees, and then they're spaced like perfectly away from each other so that the tree shaker can come down in between the trees and shake the trees. And then the almonds fall down, they dry on the ground for a while. And then like the sweeper comes to collect all of the almonds. And then it goes into like a huge machine that then sorts and shells them and rejects all of the defective ones. So all of that, you know, there's so much money put into the machines that process these. Right. They can churn out almonds like, I don't know how many they churn out per minute, but like a machine can do it so much faster than a person.
Sure. Oh. So part of it is scale, like large quantities, which allows for mechanization. And I'm pretty sure they get a lot of subsidies indirectly from the US, let's say water subsidies.
I haven't looked, I don't know exactly, but yeah, the government support is definitely a big part of why farms are able to make money or able to make investments, for sure. You know, you compare that to like these Afghan guys who maybe they've been doing it for generations, but it's still completely manual. They still take like poles to shake the trees with poles, and they grab everything on blankets from the floor, and then they're spreading it out on the rooftops to dry. And then it's women who are hulling the almonds. You know, it just, all of that, it's great in terms of employment, in terms of building community, but it will end up being like more expensive and slower than doing it in California.
Right, but also much, much better tasting.
Yeah, well, I mean, they taste different. I mean, to me, they taste better. And every once in a while, I will go and I buy almonds from the Valencia almonds from Spain or the California almonds, just to remind myself what the standard almond tastes like. And I'm always disappointed every time. I'm like, oh, this is what almonds taste like in the shops. They're not good. But, you know, it's not true that, it's not always true that the manually processed things grown the traditional ways taste better. You know, that's not always true, because of course those machines, they're really advanced. They're rejecting the defective ones. They're rejecting the the empty shells. You know, they sort of sort out all of the bad ones. And then there's so much money spent on like improving seeds and trying to improve the taste, you know, like apples.
Right.
If you go to a supermarket and buy an apple, they're like trademarked now. And there's been so much money and investment into growing like better tasting apples.
Right. 50 years ago, there's only like a few varieties of apples.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. But now it's, you have to buy the rights to grow this apple.
A particular type of,
Go ahead.
Yes. Oh, the manual way sounds more like environment friendly for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the thing that I do talk about with these almonds is that because almonds come from Afghanistan originally, they're adapted to the water. They're adapted to the environment. So this is the environment where they grew naturally. Mm. Whereas in other places, especially with industrial orchards, you have to irrigate, you have to fertilize. You know, it's I think it's less stressful for the environment because they come from there.
Yeah. So this means consumer has to know about that, right? Why it costs.
Yeah, there's so much that, I mean, as a society, we've gotten so used to just going to the supermarket and buying something off the shelf. So there's a lot of messaging that has to happen. And I would say that this is kind of the big challenge for me now, is how do I craft that message in a way that makes sense and but also is simple enough for people to understand.
Oh, you're right.
Yeah. You know, and I also understand why some of these importers and distributors weren't so interested in the beginning when I approached them, because they don't have that time to spend on crafting that message.
Mm-hmm.
So how are you going to approach that, the crafting of the message? Do you have a team that you're working with, or any kind of advisors or any, you know, volunteers?
I actually just spoke with a business school student today about helping with a project to kind of do some market segmentation.
Nice.
I suppose if I had that network, like I mentioned, you know, I would have more of an idea of where to start. Or maybe if I had gone to business school like you did, I could have some syllabuses I could refer to. But I think, you know, I'm very upfront about the fact that I'm just fumbling around on my own.
Well, there's nothing wrong with that, but I also think a lot of business school students would love to work with you on this on a volunteer basis or on a project basis. Are you mm-hmm. working with a business school in Denmark?
The schools in Denmark are quite flexible mm-hmm. with in terms of having their students do projects.
Right.
So yeah, if this student does not, if it doesn't work out with him, then I'll probably approach the Copenhagen Business School right. to see if there's anyone who's interested there. Because it's an interesting project for a marketing student as well yes. to sort of like identify the market segments and the message. I think it would be an interesting project, yeah.
Absolutely. And I think a lot of people would be interested in working with you on this, I would imagine. Mm-hmm. What other segments, like, so for example, right now we talked about consuming almonds at a bar or in a restaurant and maybe at home, but what about in terms of like creating recipes for people where there's, you know, you can use these almonds or these pine nuts with this or that dish?
Yeah, that's definitely in my plan. The one of the challenges there is that I'm a terrible cook. And I have no idea. I mean, I eat food, but
right.
my husband does all the cooking.
Right. You focus on eating like me.
Correct. Yes. I do need to, that's part of my whole like influencer thing is to send out these products to some chefs to help sort of put them in dishes.
Right. Or bakeries or
mm-hmm. yeah. yeah
pastry
yes yeah. I have just discovered or just learned about this Spanish pastry thing called a panela, and it's essentially an almond flour pine nut pastry wow. thing
That's
which
perfect.
Is
perfect.
Exactly the two products that I'm selling
eat.
Right now.
We can do a taste test in Tokyo for you.
Yeah.
Yeah. I actually have a friend who's volunteered to help me like make this.
Nice.
And then, nice. You know, I can try it. I can try to send this out. I can Instagram about it.
Yeah. You can do a, like a YouTube video on how it's made and then the end result. And there's a mm-hmm. million things. Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, the nuts are the not only the taste, but also they're rich, nutrition rich. How
true.
Yeah, so mm-hmm. it's good for the health, right?
Yeah,
here in Japan, the people eat the nuts for the health, Yeah,
health benefits.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a type of almond that I'm considering importing also from Afghanistan that they call the Mamra almond. Mm-hmm. And that's known, that's quite in demand in India, specifically because it's supposed to have higher oil content and supposed to be better for you. So definitely the health aspect is another way of marketing nuts. And that's often how I've seen the traditional, like the Almond Board of California. They do all of the marketing for the almond industry, and they usually adopt this sort of health focused approach for their messaging. But yeah, I know I'm like, I am aware that there is this whole sort of all of these different options for how to market this. I don't know. I'm still at the beginning, you know?
You're still at? Sorry?
I'm still at the beginning.
I see. Yeah. Very nice. Yeah. So what would you advise, let's say, a student or someone who's about to graduate from university in terms of becoming an entrepreneur?
You know, I read so many books and articles, and they all say, like, know who your customer is before you start. And I'm reading this and I'm like, of course, it's so obvious. Why would you even need to think about it? But now, as I'm like really invested in my business, I realize I haven't actually done that. I haven't done that work of finding out exactly who in this, in Denmark or Northern Europe, is willing to spend a premium for nuts that they've never seen before from a country that they don't know anything about. You know, it had seemed so obvious to me. And I was so focused on all of the other stuff, like, how do I find the supplier? How do I vet the suppliers to make sure that they're okay? How do I transport them? How do I store them? What kind of packaging do I buy? Like all of that stuff I've been immersed in for the last 6 months. And I realized that now that I have it all and I have it here, who am I selling to? You know, I need to know that.
Okay, so that's I would say that
yes, like do that, know your customer and have a very good idea and know that they exist, because I was very aspirational in the sense that I thought like, okay, I am my customer, but there aren't so many people that are quite like me, right? Who are willing to spend money on the same things that I would be willing to spend money on. So
you never know. You might, as you said earlier, you might just have to do some work to find your tribe, as they say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. I mean, I hope they exist.
How much we'll more see. Expensive are your nuts? Like, let's say for 100 grams, just to give, just to get some idea.
So I sell a 100 gram bag of almonds for about $9. Mm-hmm. And you can buy a 100 gram bag for about $3 or $4.
The California one, or
yeah, if you buy them at a cheap place, you can find them for about $3 or $4. So that's a lot. That's a huge difference, right?
But that's if you buy them if you buy them at a cheap place. What about at a normal place? Like $5.
At a normal place, yeah, probably $5. So it's almost double. One of the things that people are willing to spend money on is an organic certified products.
Right.
And organic products here in Denmark is actually really popular. I think Denmark has one of the highest, I think if not the highest, then one of the highest per capita organic consumption. Mm-hmm. So a lot of consumers just look for that label that says that something is organic. But these products are not organic. So, for various reasons, it's will be extremely difficult to certify them as organic.
So they're not organic, or they're not certified as organic?
There's something that people talk about called organic by default, which means that they're grown in a completely organic way without chemical pesticides or fertilizers. A lot of farmers in Afghanistan, they just can't afford it. But because to get organic certification, you have to document that you're not using pesticides and fertilizers. You have to have records. You have to basically prove that you're not using this stuff. And if you're illiterate, like many farmers are, if you don't have receipts, if you have lots of little plots of land in different places instead of one big plot of land, you know, it will just be basically impossible to be certified.
So they could be, or you could be growing something that's organic, but not being able to, as you said, not able to document that it's organic.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's happening in your case.
That's what happens in a lot of cases, in a lot of products, a lot of fruits, vegetables, spices. Mm. But the certification, you know, it's like this seal of approval that is not so easy to get. And very often it doesn't mean that the product is better necessarily, or that the product hasn't been, I mean, even the organic certification, you can use, there are some approved chemicals, but it's just, once you put that stamp on, you know, then it signifies something for the consumer. But the consumer, without that stamp, the consumer doesn't have the same level of trust or, you know.
And won't want to pay a premium, presumably.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, this is something that I'm hoping to find out. Who are those consumers that are willing to pay that premium without the certification? Like, what are they willing to pay a premium for, if not that stamp?
Sure. Is there anyone in Afghanistan that's trying to work with farmers so that, I mean, in view of what you just said about certification, is there some certification body that is willing to certify but not using those traditional methods of certification so that you can include farmers in Afghanistan?
For organic?
Yeah. So in other words, a certification body that comes in and says, yeah, this is what we're doing, we've been doing so far, but in reality, in a place like Afghanistan, you're excluding X percentage of farmers who are following the organic methods. They just can't certify it for very legitimate reasons. Is anyone trying to sort of solve that problem?
I'm sure that this has been discussed before. I wouldn't know. There's so many projects and agriculture related projects in Afghanistan. The U.S. government has done a lot. And you can actually, I spoke with an organic certifying company that could go to Afghanistan and do the certification. You know, the certification itself is quite quick in the sense that they like go for a few days and then review the documents and, you know, it's kind of like the test, but studying for the test takes a while, and teaching people about the test, that's a much longer process.
Interesting.
I mean, you also need to document that you've been chemical free for 3 years. There's tons of stuff going on, and I would not know all of it.
Right.
But you know, that's also one of the issues. That was one of the frustrations of working in Afghanistan. There's so many actors,
right,
and donors, and they each have their own piece, and these pieces aren't really talking to each other.
Right.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of like putting together a jigsaw puzzle, but you don't know what the whole thing looks like.
Right.
Oh.
And this happens often in places like Afghanistan, with so many donors and so many aid projects, aid groups, and they're not necessarily always coordinating or always on the same page.
Yeah. Exactly. So, I don't know. I'm sure I will have a much better idea, or I can give you a bit more specifics in terms of the messaging and the potential next steps in about 6 months' time.
Okay, we'll do a follow-up.
At the moment, yeah. At the moment, I'm still trying to figure out, like, okay, what am I doing with this shutdown that keeps getting extended?
Yeah.
Yeah, the Danish government has been providing support for businesses. So I hope that a lot more will survive than in other places. But I think, you know, businesses also have to adjust as well. And I hope that this doesn't happen, but I suspect that the newer, more innovative businesses, or the ones that had just started, maybe they'll end up not being able to make it because they hadn't found their audience and their market before they were forced to shut down. I hope I'm not in that category.
We hope so too.
but we'll see. I mean, I also, I didn't mention this before, but I still do work at the UN. So
This
is still, it's giving me an income source to continue to fund this business.
Right. Teresa, thank you so much. Is there anything that you want to mention that we haven't discussed so far?
If your listeners found anything that I said interesting, I would encourage them to, next time they buy nuts, to just look at where the nuts come from. Because most likely the bag, the packaging won't say where they come from, because the nuts, you know, like the almonds I mentioned that travel through so many countries, the supply chain for nuts is so convoluted and so untransparent. And when things are so untransparent like that, that means that you can really go for the lowest common denominator. Mm-hmm. You know, you can, everything is mixed together. There's no demands on the producers to be better. You have no idea where, you have no idea that, you know, how one thing tastes from one country versus another thing. So yeah, I guess that's the thing I would ask your listeners to do, yeah, is just to like think about, where do these things come from, and why don't I know?
Why it's not clear, yeah.
Yeah.
No, I definitely noticed a difference in the taste of almonds in Japan as opposed to the US, for example, or the Middle East. You know, almonds from Iran tend to be larger, tend to have a different flavor, different consistency, texture. I don't know. In Japan, we don't really get very good almonds, I think.
Yeah.
But I still eat them, so.
Yeah, you have to, of course. Yeah. That's what you have, right?
Yeah.
But I would be surprised if Japan is getting almonds anywhere except the US or Australia.
Hmm. I wonder. I can't read the packaging here, so I have no idea where it's from. Or you know, it may not even say where it's from, even if I did read Japanese, as you said.
The main, most of the almonds, they said from California.
I don't think so.
Well, the packaging said California almond, but I never seen the other countries.
That might be the supply chain and just where that it's been stored, and maybe it's not as fresh. But
there's California also.
California produces like 70 or exports like 70% of the almonds that you find in stores. So most likely any almond that you find anywhere is a California almond. But of course it's where are they getting it from? Like maybe if they are smaller in Japan, maybe they're just getting the second tier almonds.
Yeah.
And nobody knows, or nobody is demanding better.
Yeah.
All right. So we'll talk again in 6 months, Teresa.
Yeah. We're looking forward to.
Well, thank you very much for having me. Thanks for waking up so early.
It's okay. Thank you for staying up late.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
It's really hope to talk again soon.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah. We're going to put up your name and website on the podcast description. So you can
Great. Thanks very much.
All right. Take care.
Okay. Have a good evening. Have a good day. Thanks. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you for joining us for another episode of The Glocal with your host, Tamago
and Kangaku Taro. See you next time.
Bye-bye.